Hey everybody, I'm Kai Rosdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make the day make sense. It is, thank the Lord, Friday, the 17th of November.
Yes, yes it is. And I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome everybody to Friday, where we do our weekly happy hour, Economics on Tap. Thanks everybody who is in the YouTube live stream, the folks joining on the Fan Run Discord, and yeah, happy Friday to all.
We will do what we usually do on a Friday. We'll do some news. We'll take a break. Then we'll play a round of half full, half empty with, I think, Drew is in today. I think I heard him down the line. But before we get to it, what are you drinking, Ms. Adams?
So I am drinking what we talked about this on Monday. You were not here, but Wisconsin has named its official cocktail the Brandy Old Fashioned. So I made a Brandy Old Fashioned, and we did a little poll in the YouTube chat prior to the show for folks who were on early as to whether I should garnish it sweet or savory. And it's weird because it's a sweet drink-ish. But they wanted a savory garnish, which is apparently things that people do in Wisconsin. So I have an old-fashioned garnished with olives.
Wow. Wow. I couldn't even think of what
this
a savory garnish was.
This old-fashioned has Sprite in it.
Why?
Because that's how they make it. They make it with brandy instead of whiskey.
Oh, Wisconsin? The great state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, yeah. The great state of Wisconsin. And you put Sprite in it. You put orange slices in it, and the maraschino cherries and bitters and, you know, salty things on top. So here I go.
Interesting. I was just going to say, I am such a cocktail neophyte that I couldn't even process like savory garnishes. But anyway, I've got things to do and I have to be late tonight, and I was up stupidly early this morning. So I'm having a cup of coffee. Just a quick perusal of the YouTube chat here. Patricia Long is having Humble C non-alcoholic foggy IPA. All right, so Patricia Long, I need you to hook me up with this. Humble C non-alcoholic foggy IPA, pretty good. Can you get them in California? And what does the finish taste like? I've talked about Athletic hazy IPAs here, non-alcoholic versions. And as I've said, the finish tastes to me like wet cardboard. So it has the finish on this one. That's my question. Matthew Finko says in the chat, we do not do olives in an old-fashioned sweet in Wisconsin. So I'm just saying.
Wait, so I did it wrong. I'm sorry. I tried.
Well, you did what the people wanted, right? The people are with you, Kimberly, but the great state of Wisconsin is not.
Well, maybe there's a different version of old-fashioned, of the Wisconsin old-fashioned to be done with the savory. I'm sorry. I did not mean to disrespect the Wisconsin old-fashioned. I tried.
All right, so Patricia Long says, lots of citra nose on this hazy IPA. The palate is pretty close to actual IPA. All right, okay, I'll take that. I will take that. Cool. Now, I'm just scrolling back to remind myself what it was. Anyway, should we get on with things here?
Yeah, let me go with a couple of mine first because it's a little heavy side, and then I want to switch to my happier one.
Totally fine.
So the first one is this piece in Al Jazeera, and the headline is, if Gaza were in your city, how much of it would be destroyed? And, you know, you can't ignore the scenes of, you know, absolute devastation out of Gaza as an ongoing war continues. And, you know, you're talking about a relatively small area with 2.3 million people packed into it. And according to this Al Jazeera piece, Israel's dropped more than 25,000 tons of explosives on the Gaza Strip, which is just 141 square miles in size. That's the equivalent of two nuclear bombs landing on an area a quarter the size of London. As of November 10th, half of Gaza's homes, 222,000 residential units, have been damaged, with more than 40,000 completely destroyed. The reason this piece is interesting is because they then go on to project the layout of Gaza onto different cities around the world. So, and then map over it where the destruction is so that you can see what it would look like in your city. And, well, if you live in one of these big cities, and if you go down, they have Los Angeles, they have New York, they have Miami as well, just for context. Because I think it's, when you think about war, it's so often hard to conceptualize the spaces that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to Gaza, just how small of an area we're talking about when people are supposed to flee from one area to another and, you know, can't. And so there's not much to say, you know, in our lane about this. But I thought this was a really interesting visual. And with the idea that context and being able to sort of see things in a different way is useful to people, I wanted to highlight that. Now, what is in our lane is an article that one of our colleagues, I forget who, posted in our Slack channel earlier this week about what it's like to be working when in the midst of all of this, if you are Palestinian. Those who were listening when Rima was hosting, I guess it was like 2 weeks ago, know how challenging it has been for her. And she shared that she's lost some family members in Gaza and since then has lost even more who've been killed in the bombings. And The Guardian has a piece about just how challenging it is for people working to work through this, right? And I have to imagine, you know, a lot of, and I don't have to imagine, I've spoken to some of our Jewish colleagues who are also really struggling. But I thought that this was an important piece and just a reminder to be kind and gentle with your colleagues, regardless of where they land on this, as this awfulness just continues. Mm-hmm. So those were the two darker ones I wanted to share.
Yeah, so why don't you keep going with your lighter one, because, you know, mine is just a stupid thing, so.
Okay, lighter one, to Portugal, where I saw this story in Canary Media, which is clean energy journalism for a cooler tomorrow, and they said for nearly a week, a country of 10 million met customer needs with wind, hydro, and solar, a test run for operating the grid without fossil fuels. Portugal just ran the entire country on 100% renewable energy for 6 days in a row, which shows that, yes, that's a smaller scale, but it can be done with intention and effort and organization. And Portugal did it. It started its decarbonization journey with some legacy hydropower, but no nuclear capacity or plans to build any. That meant it had to figure out how to cut fossil fuel use just by maximizing new renewables. It committed to building renewables early and often, pledging a 2050 deadline for net zero carbon emissions in 2016, several years before the European Union as a whole found the conviction to take that step. Portugal's last coal plants shut down in 2022, leaving imported fossil gas as the backstop for on-demand power. But they did it. And so, go Portugal.
Yeah, that's cool. And I don't know anything about the politics of Portugal, but one wonders what the political dysfunction level is there that let all this happen, that has let them build the infrastructure and all of that stuff you need to get that done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, what you got?
You know, mine's just a stupid, goofy thing about Sam Altman being fired from OpenAI. So it's not really germane. I mean, it was a lighter item just because all the other news, honestly, is... Yeah, it's just terrible, right? There's Elon Musk and anti-Semitism on Twitter. There's obviously the global anti-Semitic rise. I just can't even. So, you know, anyway, we'll just go on. How about that? Should we just go on? Let's just go on. We're going to take a break, lighten the mood a little bit. Half full, half empty when we come back after we pay some bills. Here we go.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
Okay, now it is time to play our wonderful game, Half Full, Half Empty, which is hosted by the also wonderful, our very own Drew Jostad. Take it away.
All right. Coming up into next year's election season, Netflix and Prime Video have said they will not air political ads. HBO and Paramount among those who will. Are you half full or half empty on political ads on streaming?
Ooh, Kimberly Adams, this one's yours.
Well, I am going to go half empty on political ads on streaming. However, I do want to shout out this story because this story was done by our very own DC intern, Maya Marshall Hoff, who's been working on this for most of the time that she's been with Marketplace in DC. And I mean, she has been on these streaming companies for months trying to get them on the record about whether or not they were going to allow political ads on streaming. And so many of them were cagey and dodgy about it. So good on her for her work on this. But I'm half empty on the actual thing happening.
I'm the same. You know what I saw this week that kind of stunned me? That Meta is going to allow political ads that say that the 2020 election was fraudulent. You can't impugn the character of future elections, but you can say the prior election was fraudulent, which just, it blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind.
Okay, I'm switching to all the way empty. All the way empty.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Totally lighter note. Chuck Klanknecht wants to know where Jasper is.
Downstairs, I would call for him, but he's deaf.
But
so there's nothing I can do.
Fair enough.
He will come if he chooses.
All right.
What's next?
With Bumble's stock price in trouble, they've replaced their CEO. Are you half full or half empty on dating apps losing their spark?
Also, you first, Kimberly Adams.
Really torn on this one. I think they are a necessary evil in the world of dating these days. However, my experiences have been mixed, to put it mildly. And I am not on Bumble. Haven't been in a while. DC Bumble is interesting, to put it mildly. But I have heard pretty consistently from most of my single friends, women friends in particular, not so much the men, that they're kind of over the dating apps. Kristen Schwab has done a lot of reporting on this. And, you know, people are legit hiring matchmakers and stuff and dating coaches and shelling out for it. But it's rough out here, man.
Yeah, whatever Kimberly said, I'm going to go with, because I haven't been on the dating market in a very, very, very long time.
Count yourself lucky.
Oh, and I do. I can't imagine what it's like out there now. Truly, I can't. Although I suppose every generation says that. Just super quick to correct myself.
No,
Chuck
Klanknecht.
The middle K in Chuck Klanknecht is silent, the middle K. So, Chuck, I apologize. I bet every generation says it's tough out there. I bet they do. I bet they do.
Yeah, I guess all you have to do is like read Pride and Prejudice.
Right, you know. It is a universally acknowledged. Anyway, Drew, what do you got?
This week, Martha Stewart announced she's canceling her Thanksgiving dinner. Are you half full or half empty on just skipping it?
Wow.
This is so interesting. I got a Slack from Bridget like on Tuesday, Wednesday, which out of nowhere said, hey, look, Martha Stewart and I have the same Thanksgiving plans. And what you have to know about Bridget Bodner is that she is a Martha Stewart devotee, shall we say.
Oh, is she?
Oh, my lordy B. Are you kidding me?
I
yes.
I did not know.
That and the Golden Girls, but I'm perhaps sharing too much. Anyway, so Bridget, are you canceling your Thanksgiving plans? What? Somebody hit me up in the Slack. Holy cow. I can't even believe this. Anyway, so all my kids are going to be home. My mom's going to be here, so we're going to have a full house, so that'll be nice. And if Thanksgiving is what it takes to make that happen, then I say let's have some Thanksgiving plans. But, you know, to each his own, as it were.
You know, I have such mixed thoughts on Thanksgiving. I really appreciate the idea of, like, gathering family together and acknowledging what you're grateful for and being thankful and friends and loved ones and all that jazz. The origins of it, problematic, like the origins of so many things in this country, deeply problematic. So there's that. But in terms of Martha Stewart canceling her Thanksgiving plans, you know what? I'm going to say half full because I, as somebody who does entertain and I know how overwhelming it can be, I fully respect somebody saying, you know what, not this year. I'm just going to sit this one out every so often. Yeah. So half full.
There we go. All right. What else we got here?
This next story comes from the New York Times about how it's healthier for the soil and pollinators to just let the leaves decompose. Are you half full or half empty on unraked leaves?
I had not seen this story, but 12-year-old me, who was out there raking all these leaves on our property with my dad and my little brother when I was a kid, man, yes, let's let them stay. Let them stay.
I'm half full. This brings back childhood memories of our family home growing up, because I guess the soil in the backyard was like 100% clay. And so for all of my childhood, my parents would just let the leaves stay at the end of the season. And eventually, when I was like 10, I was able to have a vegetable garden in the backyard. And so that's when I first started gardening, when I was like 10. And I was able to do that because the soil had started to recover.
So, that's great.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Let's
fire up the poll.
Okay.
All right. Poll. Folks in the YouTube chat, you will be able to weigh in. And, you know, while you're there, if you want to hit the like button, we wouldn't be mad at it.
All right. A new survey from Instacart and Harris Poll shows that among the least favorite Thanksgiving sides, candied yams is the worst. Are you half full or half empty on candied yams?
Wait. I don't know if you have the list available, but I want to hear what the rest of the list is.
What are the options?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know the whole list, but the top three least favorite were candied yams, green bean casserole, and cranberry sauce.
How are peas not on that list? How are peas, the worst vegetable known to humankind, how are they not on the list? That's all I'm saying.
I'm looking.
For reals. Peas are terrible.
Trying to find this thing. So I read a think piece way back in the day about casseroles in particular, and I think it's useful to acknowledge here that casseroles in general seem to be, and I'm sure I will be added and possibly canceled for this, but they seem to be a lot less common at Black family gatherings than they are at white family gatherings. Don't know why. It's casseroles are just like seemingly one of these culturally different things. But except for green bean casserole, which seems to be the outlier.
That's pretty funny.
And so, because I do remember my sister once bringing a green bean casserole to Thanksgiving dinner, and everyone was like, what's wrong with you? What, a casserole? Really? And so, casseroles do show up occasionally. All right. I think I found this poll. All right. Here are the options. Candied yams were 27%. That's what won. Green bean casserole, 25%. Cranberry sauce, 24%. Sweet potato casserole, 21%. Stuffing, 12%. Salad, 12%. Mashed potatoes, 8%. Dinner roll, 7%, which I guess everybody likes a dinner roll. And that's a, you know, ranking of sort of the most hated. But, you know, if you think about it, it's just like a third, not even a third of people hate the candied yams. So, I mean, this is a pretty evenly-ish distributed list. It's not like tons of people hate the candied yams.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
All right. So the poll, we're going to close that poll. Kimberly, what do you say?
Half empty. I actually can deal with candied yams. But they're so sweet. I can usually only have like one or two.
So I'm okay with candied yams, so I'm half empty on them being the least popular. I will say, though, why bother with dinner rolls at Thanksgiving? There's so much other stuff that's so
right.
much better than that, you know?
Like, there's stuffing.
I know. And potatoes. It's not like you need starches and carbs and all that jazz. Anyway, poll is in. Candied yams, the most hated Thanksgiving side dish. False, say 59%. I guess that means half empty. And half full on hating candied yams are 40% of the 189 people who voted. So there you go. Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry. Somebody with the username Toxic, they really just hate the marshmallow version of yams. You cannot, tiny little marshmallows, don't do that.
If you put that on there, then absolutely negative. Yeah. I won't eat it. Don't do that. You don't need it. It's already sweet enough. Why would you do that? Okay. Yes. So thank you for that clarification. That was important. You know, several people are commenting about the dinner rolls here, saying they're being used to sop up the gravy. Fair, but you can also do that with the stuffing. And that the dinner rolls are later, you save the dinner rolls to make your sandwiches later with your leftovers.
Oh, well, people that's fair. Ahead. But I mean, I get that. But I mean, okay, fine. But that implies you don't actually eat them at the meal. So why have them at the meal? I'm just saying. I mean, I hear you on the sandwiches later. Totally, I do.
Yeah. Are you doing Thanksgiving at your house this year? Like, are you having dinner?
We are having dinner, and I think it's like a dozen people. I think.
Do you call it dinner or supper? And what time do you eat?
Well, my mother-in-law is coming, so we're going to fight back against her. What do you mean we're not eating at 2:30 in the afternoon? And we're going to have a reasonable hour of, you know, like 6:30 at night. Are you kidding me? Come on.
It's so interesting.
Like, supper. I don't know the supper thing. Yeah.
It's funny, like, to see the distribution of what time people eat dinner. It says, like, so much about family dynamics often, what time people have Thanksgiving dinner.
Totally.
All right. Well, that is it for today. Thank you so much, everybody who joined us in the YouTube live stream and chatting and on Discord and everything like that. We are going to be back on Monday. And in the meantime, if you have a question or a comment or some audio you want to share, or we're still looking for your state-specific cocktails, which you hopefully won't mess up as badly as I did this brandy old-fashioned of Wisconsin, you can send that to us. Our voicemail is 508-UBSMART. You can also email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Our interns, Neil Farshabandi.
The team behind our Friday game is Emily McCune and Antoinette Brock. Marissa Cabrera is our senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts and apparently lover of Martha Stewart. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on demand.
And you know how I can tell she's not listening today? Because I didn't get a slack from her saying, Kai! Yeah, so there you go. Oh, wait, Bridget's there. She's only making a pie. In-laws are hosting. Well, there we go. That settles it.
There you go.
Bridget was lurking today.
Lurking.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.